the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. We're making a change to lifetime income this week, which will be permanent. Lifetime income will span 2 days, Mondays and Tuesdays of every week. So Jim and I are going to discuss Medicare this week and the radical changes that are coming up for people who are Medicare recipients. And then tomorrow, our guest on the program will be Richard Turin, who has won more World's Best Awards than any other travel consultant in the United States. He was named World's Best Travel Generalist by Condé Nast Traveler Magazine. And the question is, why are we talking about this on lifetime income? Because knowing how to recreate in your time of retirement is important to keeping your health and longevity. You know, for the first part of the program, however, today, we are going to discuss a subject that is really impacting us and will have a growing impact upon individuals who will go on Medicare now and in the future. What's happening is that things are changing rather rapidly in the area of Social Security and Medicare and Obamacare, but the media aren't telling you a lot of this, and in a lot of cases, the politicos aren't going to do that. It's not good press for them. We're finding out many things that there are things about Obamacare that have turned out to simply not be true. From you can keep your doctor to it's not a tax to you can keep whatever health plan you want and it's going to be affordable for everybody. Or doing Obamacare would bring down the cost of health care. It's doing just the opposite. As a matter of fact, most of the major promises that were made to us have already been broken or are in the process of being broken. Health care costs have been going up high single digits per year, if not double digits per year. The unfortunate news we're going to share with you today, your Medicare costs are going to go up another 114% by 2019. If you have Medicare Advantage, those costs are going to go up and equalize with regular Medicare. Your insurance premiums are also going to go up because Medicare is going to be covering less procedures and services, which means insurance companies will be paying more, which means their premiums are going to go up. Basically, if you haven't gotten this by now, everything's going up, despite what all the promises have been made to you by the politicos. So what we're learning is there are a lot of costs that we simply didn't know about.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
You know, it's amazing. We did a show, John, a couple of months ago. I think it was just before we took off on our August recess on how Medicare pricing hikes were coming in 2016. And it was amazing. Yesterday's Wall Street Journal on Wednesday had two front page articles on Medicare premiums going up. Congress fails to stave off this 52% increase. And this is going to affect a lot of the new Medicare beneficiaries that are not receiving Social Security. So if you are going to go on Medicare in 2016, but you're not going to receive Social Security, let's say you're not at full retirement age, you can expect to see Medicare premiums go up by almost 52%. And what that's going to mean, I mean, we're talking big bucks here. We're talking about you can see your premiums go up from $104 to $146.90. And for those who are in the higher income categories, $509.80 a month. A big increase that's coming your way.
You know, Jim, before we move on to the increased cost that we're going to be covering, I think what we need to do is review the possible 52% increase, which is coming in January. That's just a couple of months away.
Well, I mean, the first thing we need to explain is that Medicare needs to raise revenues by 25%. That's what's prompting all of this. The problem is something in the Social Security law called hold harmless provision. This basically, John, says you cannot raise Medicare premiums more than the cost of living on Social Security. It's designed to protect Social Security beneficiaries so each year you don't get less money than the year before. Now, here's the problem. How do you raise Medicare premiums right now without passing it on to everybody? Well, you can't because of the hold harmless. So what's happening here is where they get this 52% increase that's going to go into effect in January 2016 is the Part B Medicare income premiums are going to go and be passed on to those who are not receiving Social Security. Here's the problem and why they need more revenues. According to reports by the Social Security Commissioner, basically in 2014, Medicare income from premiums was basically $259.8 billion and expenditures were $265.9 billion. So assets in the Medicare Trust Fund dropped from $74.1 billion to $68.1 billion. Put it in a nutshell, they need to raise premiums and revenues. So heads up, folks, rate increases are coming to everyone, not just the people that are going to get the 52% increase coming in January, and they're going to be substantial.
And since that's part of the bad news, let's get on with the rest of the bad news. So tell us, if you would, what's coming?
This is going to take a little bit of a time, but there's been a number of laws that have been passed over the years that have led us to where we are today. According to the CMS study, it shows that if Medicare charged the same rate as, let's say, private health care would, the premiums would be higher by roughly 37% by the year 2010. And if you take a look at what has happened to so many people on private insurance, especially after 2010, is you've seen these increases. Basically, Medicare has been raising their growth rate or expenditures from 1997 to 2010 by 4% a year. In the private sector, it's been 6.4%. So when you see all of these things, and the other thing too is for 2010, Medicare physicians got paid only 81% of what they had earned from private payments, a problem we ought to talk on another day or another show. So we need to talk about Part B, C, and D and how it's funded. Financing on Part B differs from, let's say, Part A, which is hospital expense. The main source of funding for Part B is primarily financed by contributions that come from the general fund of the U.S. Treasury. Basically, the Treasury or the government is paying for 75% of the cost of Medicare. The other 25% is you, the Medicare beneficiary. That's reflected in the premium you pay. Now, where do we get this 25% number? There was a law passed called the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, which permanently set the standard Medicare Part B premium at 25%. And that's been in place since 1997. The problem is today that 25% isn't covering all of Medicare expenses, and they need to raise revenues because otherwise we're going to have a huge hole in the government's budget deficit, and that is something they're trying to avoid.
And what you said here is that Medicare basically has been underpricing in their premiums since private health care costs are going up, what, 50% or more? We've known for a long time that they're even outstripping inflation. And so with Medicare running deficits, the costs are going up. Now, the politicians don't want to talk about this. This must be a third rail type of thing for them. A few Republicans talk about it. We have a presidential election right now, and one party is even promising a whole bunch more free stuff. And you'd never guess, Jim, we're going to be $20 trillion in debt by the time President Obama leaves office. It's like there's a major disconnect going on here. But anyway, what comes next?
Well, we need to go back. Once again, as I mentioned earlier, there's been a series of laws that have passed that have led us to this. We need to go back to 2003 and look at another law that affected Medicare. This was the Prescription Drug Improvement and Modernization Act of 2003. And this is really important because it affects what's happening to you now and to a lot of people that are on Medicare. And basically, this was passed, John, not by President Obama. This was George W. Bush. That law gave us Part B, but it changed forever how premiums are charged for Medicare. The law took effect. It was passed in 2003, but it went into effect 2007. Now premiums are higher for those who make more income. For example, if you are single, You can earn up to $85,000 without your Medicare premiums going up. If you are married, you can earn up to $170,000 and you'll still pay the $104.90 a month. However, it goes up incrementally. So by the time you reach $214,000, if you're single, your Medicare premiums are going to be $335.70. And it's $320,000 to $428,000 if you're married. Now, why that's important, these different income brackets, in other words, prior to 2007, in 2003, when this law was passed, everybody paid the same Medicare premiums. George Bush changed that. It went into effect in 2007. Now, based on your income, you might pay a different Medicare premium. And this 52% increase is important because if you are in that $104 bracket and starting next year, it's going to go from $104 to $146.90. And if you're in the bracket where you have to pay $335.70, it's going to go to $509.80 a month. So you can see there's quite a bit of jump here. And John, you know, the first time that I've seen anybody really talk about it, we talked about this about 2 months ago when I became aware of it. And then yesterday, there was two articles in the Wall Street Journal addressing this issue because Congress can't agree on anything. And so we had a commissioner from Social Security, two of them, in fact, on the show on lifetime income, and I addressed this issue with them. They said, well, you know, Congress is working on it. Well, as of today, they can't come up with a solution. So as it stands, if you are applying for Medicare, you're a first-time Medicare enrollee, and you're not receiving Social Security. That's important. You may not want it because you might forego an 8% increase by taking it a year early versus waiting to age 66. So there are a number of things that are going into effect here, but this is really going to hit a lot of people.
Well, what it also means, though, is that those who pay the most in Medicare taxes actually get the least in Medicare benefits.
Welcome to the new world of socialism.
I've been trying to get out of it for quite some time, but it's not working. But, you know, I mean, at least I can take consolation in the idea that these figures are all indexed to inflation. That's at least some plus, right?
Well, once again, another law, that's not the case anymore. There used to be these income bracket rates, just like the income tax bracket rates, were indexed to inflation so that individuals didn't find themselves, as a result of inflation, moving into higher tax brackets. So that changed with Obamacare. Beginning in 2011, as a result of Obamacare, income levels are frozen at the 2010 levels. And what this does is by freezing these threshold levels, it will increase the number of individuals who will be pushed into the higher Medicare premium brackets. It is estimated by the HHS office that 5.4 million Americans will be hit by the higher brackets due to inflation, going from 2.4 million Americans right now that are impacted to this. They figure by 2019, by freezing the brackets and not indexing them to inflation, 7.8 million Medicare beneficiaries will be hit with the higher premiums. So basically, the Office of the Actuary projects Medicare premiums, now listen to this, because this is where we're going. Medicare premiums will rise from $104.90 to $224 by 2019, and the $335.70 bracket will rise to $512 by 2019. That's a 114% increase over the next 4 years.
I'm not going to ask any other questions because I know it's just going to get worse. I'm out of here.
Okay,
goodbye. We'll see you later. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to end the show.
Yeah. Does it really get worse?
Unfortunately, it does. And what is really happening here is the next area that is going to get impacted for a higher cost is something called Medicare Advantage plans, also known as Medicare Part C. Now, this came into play under President Reagan in 1982 under TEFRA. And basically, it gave people more choices. In other words, if you were in a PPO or private healthcare system and you wanted to carry that over into Medicare, it gave you the choice. They became very popular because they were better programs. They included more things. I mean, there are a lot of reasons people choose Medicare Advantage, and there are several reasons. Coverage. For example, Medicare Advantage plans cover everything offered by a traditional Medicare Part A and B program, but they also offer additional benefits not covered by traditional Medicare, like dental care, hearing and vision screening, prescription drug programs. Another advantage is cost. While you're getting extra coverage benefits, the enrollee's out-of-pocket costs are likely to be less with a Medicare Advantage program, so you're paying less money. Convenience. Medicare Advantage programs offer more convenience than, let's say, the traditional Medicare, Medigap Part D coverage, and you get it all under one umbrella. So it is not only convenient, but it costs less money. And the other thing is what happened as a result of Obamacare. They are going to revise the methodology for paying plans and reducing the benchmarks. For 2011, the benchmarks will be frozen at 2010 levels. Reductions in these benchmarks will be phased in over a 2 to 6 year period from 2012 to 2016. So by 2017, when the new benchmarks are phased in, they will range from 95% of traditional Medicare cost all the way up to 115% of traditional Medicare costs, depending on, you know, where you're getting your Medicare Advantage program. They differ by regions and territories. So, John, basically, they're going to equalize the cost structure between Medicare Advantage and regular Medicare.
Okay, but I would assume that to a certain degree, this is a good thing. But even despite that, we know a lot of things have changed really dramatically since the passage of Obamacare. And that was one of the little sleights of hand that went undetected by most of the people in the media, was that they were robbing Peter to pay for Paul. They were making changes to Medicare to allow Obamacare to make its takeoff without pointing it out. But at the time, we didn't know. And you have to remember how that debate occurred way back when. And that was, they suddenly announced that they were going to pass this bill by the summer recess, and we had like, what, 2 months to do this, and bam, everybody went into this frenzy, and then there were claims and counterclaims, and people were ridiculed. By the way, most of the things we were ridiculed about were true. That's something we should point out. And then finally, Speaker Nancy Pelosi said we had to pass the bill so we could find out what's in it, which means, of course, that our people are voting on bills that they have no idea what's in it, much less the people. But anyway, that's how we got where we are. Like it or not, we are in this mess. So what's in store for Medicare Advantage plans?
Basically, John, Obamacare changed and revised the methodology for paying for plans, and it reduced the benchmarks for payments. So beginning in 2011, as I pointed out, these things are going to be eliminated. And the idea is to equalize both programs. So essentially, we're going to take the Advantage out. So basically, Part C, other than going to a PPO versus, let's say, an HMO or a regular Medicare facility, they're going to take away a lot of the things that were so favorable that made the Advantage program so popular.
So the Advantage part will eventually be eliminated. That's what we're saying here. Now, you know, it's amazing how we're finding out much more every single year as we go along. And what it really looks like, very much like we know that the whole purpose of Obamacare being structured the way it was ultimately to get us into a single payer system. But it looks like the whole thing was masterfully orchestrated deliberately to keep Americans in the dark, only revealing bits as we go along. And once they get to that point, of course, we're so entangled in it, no one would dare utter the word repeal.
So raise your hand and say, you mean you want to tax my health insurance? I'd say, no, you don't understand. I want to equalize the existing tax burden between health insurance and wages. And they'd say, you mean you want to tax my health insurance? And I just couldn't get through. So what we did is we had a compromise plan. What we'd say is if your insurance is above a certain level, a very high level, then we tax the extra above that. We wouldn't tax it. We just treat it like wages. No longer the tax break. Thought it was pretty good, but it could not get through politically and die. We thought we had nothing. But then another Massachusetts hero, John Kerry, or more likely his staff, came up with a great substitute idea. They said, look, what you economics nerds want to do is you want to say that for people with expensive health insurance plans, they will no longer get a 40% tax break. What if we instead just levied a 40% tax on the insurance companies that sell these terrible, expensive Cadillac plans. We said, well, that's pretty much the same thing, but why does it matter? I said, you'll see. And they were posted in that pass. Because the American voter is too stupid to understand the difference.
A profound comment there, Dr. Jonathan Gruber, saying Americans are too stupid to understand what's happening there. So the whole thing was structured in such a way to deceive us as we were going along. And as I mentioned, a lot of people figured out what was happening, but of course they were roundly ridiculed as being ignorant, etc., etc. But it's turning out that what they said was true, and what Jonathan Gruber shows here is that there was a tremendous lack of transparency.
This bill was written in a tortured way to make sure CBO did not score the mandate as taxes. If CBO scored the mandate as taxes, the bill dies. Okay, so it's written to do that. In terms of risk-rated subsidies, if you had a law which said healthy people are going to pay in, it made explicit that healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. Okay, just like the people, lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. And, you know, it's the second best argument. Look, I wish Mark was right. We can make it all transparent. But I'd rather have this law than not. So it's kind of like his reporter story. You know, yeah, there's things I wish I could change, but I'd rather have this law than not.
So if you listen to those tapes, Obamacare was designed to be, number one, implemented over time. And by phasing it in over time, there would be no going back. And that's what they've been doing over the years, because you can't change a major part of the economy overnight. So just like Medicare, Social Security, you know, we all know this, once a government program is enacted, it remains in place and it becomes permanent. So Obamacare took place, you know, if you think about it, it's taking over 1/7 of the U.S. economy. It's designed to be phased in over several election cycles. The full impact will start to really be felt after the next presidential election cycle, especially between 2017 and 2019. Cadillac plans will become taxed on private plans. The all-inclusive things that you're going to have included in every insurance policy, whether you need it or not, because that's going to be a requirement for insurance policies. These add-ons are going to come in. And then also, as we mentioned earlier, between 2016 and 2019, you're going to see Medicare premiums go up by 115%. And a lot of this is still ahead of us, John. Most of it, the super impact, of course, we're going to see some impact here January 1st when you get the 52% increase. But that's only going to affect 30% of new enrollees or existing people on Medicare who are not receiving Social Security. And, you know, that's why I think some are predicting by the time this is fully implemented, we could be in a crisis mode when this really hits the economy.
And this is why so often you cover healthcare issues here on the Lifetime Income program, because as this has been come up in conversation so many times about healthcare costs, they are not really dealt with in most retirement plans, which is really sad, because if you realize they chew up about a third of retirement lifetime income as costs escalate as you get older. So now you know why so much of this was kept hidden from the American people. But there's a day of reckoning on all of this, you know, whether it's inflation or Social Security or Medicare. If you notice, Jim, the old idea of security doesn't exist anymore. You're going to have to be chasing these things in retirement. So the real question is then, how do you effectively deal with this? What should people be doing to prepare for what's going to be a coming shockwave when it becomes obvious to the American public that there's a problem? And you can bet your bottom booties there's going to be political spin to try to deflect responsibility for it when it becomes public.
You know, we spend a lot of time, especially over the last couple of weeks, covering Social Security here on the program. And the reason you want to maximize your benefits is your Social Security is going to be used more and more to pay for Medicare cost. If you are on Social Security and Medicare now, you know that your Medicare premiums are taken out of your Social Security. So you want to get as much as you are entitled to so you can cover the coming shockwave that's coming in Medicare costs. And the other thing you want to do is keep yourself healthy. Because I don't care if it's from diet to exercise to de-stressing, to being mentally active. We've had Dr. Gary Small here on the program from UCLA's Longevity Center, and he's written many books on Alzheimer's and dementia. 75% of it is due to lifestyle. So there are many things you can do to avoid this. It's why we cover so many health issues here on the program. Medical costs, plain and simple, are going to be rising dramatically under Obamacare. In addition, the government is going to be covering less and less of going to hospital visits or even the payment of doctors. So you not only want to prepare for rising medical costs, but, you know, you spent your whole life preparing for retirement or saving for retirement. What good is it if you're not in good health? So you want to maintain that healthier lifestyle so you don't end up with a catastrophic illness or something that, you know, government's not going to cover that can literally bankrupt you. And it's another incentive to not only keep in shape, but also, you know, be prepared for what's coming to healthcare costs.
Now, normally here on the program, every week we do a real-life case study, but we're going to make an exception on today's program. What I think is really more important is a checklist and or guide markers that are appropriate in trying to plan what you're doing for retirement based on the things we've said here today, because this is a lot of information we've thrown past you. It's sometimes hard to analyze figures when you're listening to an audio program like this, but it is a wake-up call for everyone, so how do we plow into this? Do you have a Jim Poplava guidance guide for this?
Well, I mean, much of this program is we talk about having a plan. And that is probably the most important advice I could give you. Start out with a plan. I don't care if you're a young millennial starting out in life, just out of college and starting your first job. If you're an individual that is in midway through your career, or you're in a situation where you're a few years away from retirement, or you're now retired. Start with a plan so you know what your expenses are, your sources of income, so you can be prepared for the shockwave that's coming to the medical system. Secondly, if you do have a plan, have your plan stress test for bear markets. Guess what, folks? We've had two of them. We had one in 2000 that lasted for 2 years, and we had a major one from 2007 to 2009. I mean, just look at where we are today. Did anybody really expect 10, 15 years ago or 5 years ago, we'd be dealing with 0% interest rates, or in the case of Europe, they're actually negative interest rates, and the kind of markets that we're dealing with today? Did you ever think that money market funds would pay you zero or the bank would give you nothing? So you want to stress test for bear markets, inflation, and especially to account for higher medical costs, which you're more likely to face the last third of your retirement. Third is you really want to understand your pension and Social Security options. And I can't tell you how important this is going to be in the future. As Medicare cost premiums go up, they're going to take that out of your Social Security check. So what you want to do is make sure you know what your Social Security benefits are and you maximize them to help offset these costs. It's not just knowing your Social Security options, but also understand your Medicare options as well. So that's number three. Step number four, have a backup plan for long-term care. It's something most people aren't planning for when it hits, especially between a husband and wife. Now you're maintaining two households, one for the well spouse and one for the sick spouse. So that's number four. Number five, monitor your plan for changes in the market. Just look at the kind of markets that we're dealing today, the kind of economy that we're dealing today. And also, you know, what's going on with your health. So it's good to have a plan, but once you have a plan, you want to monitor it and make sure you're on track and also adjust for it if there's any changes in the markets, in your personal life, the economy, so that you can account for this. And number six, start taking care of yourself, whether it's diet, it's exercise, live a more healthier life so you don't get hit with these catastrophic expenses of which the government is shifting more to the individual. And number seven, and this is very important in a presidential election year, you don't want to be like Dr. Gruber there said that, you know, they're counting on the ignorance of the American people. Become an informed investor as well as an informed voter.
Yeah, and the important part to recognize here, Jim, is that they are reneging on the promises they've made to the American public. They're just doing it in a gradual way. So that way people won't catch on. That keeps the torches and pitchforks from coming to Washington until it's too late. Now, what we're going to be doing in the future here is the lifetime income will be a Monday-Tuesday event. And tomorrow, our guest on the program will be Richard Turin, who has won more World's Best Awards as far as travel consultancy goes in the United States. Planning for leisure time is a part of keeping yourself healthy as we go forward. And so this is a change in how we're doing lifetime income, but Richard Turin will be up tomorrow.
Yeah, one of the reasons we wanted to break up this segment is we want to do more in-depth interviews. The interview that I did with Richard Turin is almost 45 minutes. I did another one with a well-known author and doctor that lasted 50 minutes, but we want to get more information to you, and it was just too much putting it into one program. So we've broken it up over a two-day period. That way we can do more in-depth interviews with the authors and the people that we interview, because so much of this, John, you know, I don't care if we're covering the subject of Social Security, Medicare, health, all these issues. Sometimes there's just so much information we want to get to you. It's really hard to do it in a short period of time. So we're breaking it up, and we hope you enjoy the more in-depth interviews that are coming your way. That concludes today's Lifetime Income. Coming up tomorrow on the program will be my interview with Richard Turin. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.